For more talks and meditations, go to GloriaKGreen.com. Letting love and kindness in. So today, the topic is letting in love and kindness. And Rumi says, your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. And when I read that, it was kind of surprising to me. What do you mean the barriers I've built against love? I try to be loving to people. But if you're like me, you're much better at giving love than receiving it, at being kind than accepting kindness. To be truly happy, we need to learn to both give and accept / receive love and kindness. Love and understanding are not things we're born with. They're the result of how we use our minds and how we practice. We can choose to train our minds to truly love by understanding ourselves and understanding others. Or we can allow our stories and our habit energies to make us feel separate, alone, and in need of defending ourselves. John O'Donohue says, we do not need to go out and find love. We need to be still and let love discover us. It's not like some people are loving people and other people aren't. It's that some people have uncovered their love and they let it shine. And the others have put a big brick wall around their love so nobody can see it or feel it, not even them. And as we're thinking about love, remember that true love doesn't foster clinging. Sometimes we think it's love, but it's actually clinging or attachment. To truly love someone, you need to feel complete in yourself. If you're not complete in yourself, often you're looking for somebody to complete you, and that's not true love. You're looking for something from them. Sometimes we can't accept love because it's not truly love, it's really just attachment. And according to Frank Ostasevsky, attachment masquerades as love. It looks and smells like love, but it's a cheap imitation. You can feel how attachment grasps and is driven by need and fear. Love is selfless. Attachment is self-centered. Love is freeing. Attachment is possessive. When we love, we relax. We don't hold on so tightly, and we naturally let go more easily. That was a really hard lesson for me as my kids became adults, to just let go and love. He says, attachment likes to impersonate love. It says, I will love you if you give me what I need. Love is focused on generosity. Attachment is obsessed with getting needs met. Love is an expression of our most essential nature. Attachment is an expression of the personality. Love engenders faithfulness, aligning with our values, moving with purpose. Attachment clings in fear and grasps tightly to a particular end result. Love is selfless, and encourages freedom. Attachment is self-centered and engenders possessiveness. Attachment leaves scars. Love inclines us to gratefulness. So people pleasers like me often confuse attachment with love. You may have been raised to believe that being helpful and pleasing is the only way to earn love. It may be so ingrained in your internal chatter that you don't even notice it. You do things for people you are not asked to do. You fix problems you are not asked to fix. You put others' needs ahead of your own, and you try to be the person you think they want you to be. That's not love. That's attachment. And I know from experience, it is totally exhausting. It leaves you with nothing left. Unconsciously, you think this is the way to receive love and approval. The only way we're worthy of love is to earn it. Think about that. Have you been taught the only way to be worthy of love is to earn it? So when love is given freely, sometimes we feel like we don't deserve it and we can't accept it. When someone just does something really nice for us or shows they care and we feel like we haven't been a good friend or a good daughter or a good whatever, we can't accept it. Yvette Amaris says, people-pleasing behaviors are motivated by fear, whereas kindness is motivated by generosity and resourcefulness. I'm all about seeking approval and avoiding rejection. I want to make everyone happy, even if it means ignoring my own needs. True kindness, however, arises from a genuine, deep care for others' well-beings without expecting anything in return. So we've all internalized conditions of worth, what and who we must be in order to be lovable. And when we don't meet those unrealistic expectations, we feel like we're not worthy of love. And since we're not worthy, we can't let love in or even let kindness in. How often does someone offer to do something nice for you and you reject the offer saying, "No thanks, I've got it. I can carry this myself, I can do this." Or we reject compliments. "Oh, it was no big deal. Oh, this old thing." We also reject affection. Sometimes we stiffen when we're given a hug, or we just don't reciprocate a loving look that's given to us. We don't let it sink in. That rejection of help, kindness, or words of affection are actually bricks on the wall we built to protect ourselves from getting hurt. We don't want others to see our needs and vulnerabilities, so we put up this brick wall that no one can get through and hurt us, but no one can get through and love us either. So we can't let anything in, because then people might see that we're not good enough. Rick Hansen says, if you suppress or disown parts of yourself, feeling bad about who you are can easily follow, with the sense that there are nasty, weak, shameful, unlovable things inside of you. It may feel uneasy and tense to keep so much at bay. We end up playing small around others to keep them away from all that we cannot accept about ourselves. I spent a lifetime keeping people at bay so they wouldn't see all the things that I couldn't accept about myself. I built a big, big brick wall. And to dismantle that brick wall, I found the most important thing was to build my kindness muscle. Kindness, both giving and receiving, is a skill we can all develop. It's not something we're either born with or not born with. And it starts with how we pay attention. Kindness practice aims to increase feelings of caring and warmth for ourselves and for others. And we can increase feelings of caring by mentally sending goodwill, kindness, and warmth toward ourselves and others. And in the past, we've talked about a kindness practice where we silently repeat a series of phrases. And they are out on my website under Mindful Moments. There's a link, or if anyone wants, I have a couple copies here. that you can use to repeat to yourself on a daily basis to help build your kindness muscle. And what kindness meditation does is it helps us to develop a more selfless love. And it does so by developing the quality of loving acceptance. We have to have loving acceptance for ourselves and then loving acceptance for others, both those we love, neutral people, and even difficult people. So kindness meditation acts like a self-psychotherapy, a way of releasing our troubled mind from its pain and its confusion. It has the immediate benefit of sweetening and changing old, habituated negative patterns of mind. By practicing kindness meditation, I was able to start turning off my inner critic, or at least lowering the volume, and saying nice things to myself. And the more I did that, the easier it became, and the more resources I had to deal with the things that I thought were so terrible, and finding out that maybe I didn't really need that brick wall. But that only started happening when I really started practicing kindness meditation for myself. By practicing kindness for ourselves, we can develop a calm mind, a mind that's free from anger, greed, and jealousy. Only in the fertile ground of a peaceful mind can kindness flower. You can't be kind, you can't be loving when you're angry. They just don't work together. So as long as we calm our mind, even if we don't feel loving, the practice is going to work. It may take some time. I didn't feel loving. It felt mechanical. It felt odd. But if we keep practicing with the intention to be kind to ourselves, it's going to work. So we set the intention to be a better friend to ourselves and to be a better friend to others by realizing that we all want to be happy and we all want to be free of suffering. And when we understand that, we can see why people do some of the things they do that upset us. They're trying to be happy, not very skillfully. They're trying to reduce their suffering, but not very skillfully. Their suffering's spilling over. So sending kindness gives expression to our wishes for well-being and happiness of ourselves and of others. And you can find that recognizing and expressing goodwill has a softening effect on your heart. It opens you a little. It takes a brick or two or three off of that brick wall. And usually it evokes feelings of love, tenderness, and warmth. Usually. But sometimes softening the heart can expose difficult and painful emotions. And so you have to be careful about that. But allowing those emotions to surface in their own time is a function of the kindness practice. It's not that you're doing it wrong. That's supposed to happen. Because when you soften your heart and you let those difficult feelings come up in their own time, then you can process them. You learn that you don't really need that brick wall you built to keep yourself safe from those emotions. They're not quite so overwhelming. So the kinder we are to ourselves, the more resources we have to support us in being with difficult emotions. And that's why in times of grief, it's so important that we take some time to let a moment of goodness in. Whether it's a comforting memory, or going out and walking in nature, or listening to music, or something that gives you joy. Rick Hansen says, if you keep resting your mind on self-criticism, worries, grumbling about others, hurts, and stress, your brain will be shaped into greater reactivity, vulnerability, anxiety, and depressed mood. On the other hand, if you keep resting your mind on good events and conditions, someone was nice to you, there's a roof over your head, pleasant feelings, the things you get done, and your good intentions, over time your brain will take a different shape, one with strength and resilience hardwired into it. as well as a realistically optimistic outlook, a positive mood, and a sense of worth. So if we're going to let kindness in, it's going to change our brain. If the path that we've done through a prairie that's full of snow, 6 inches of snow, is all negative, the more we walk that path, the easier it gets to walk that path. The first time we walk through that 6 inches of snow to develop a path of kindness, it's really hard. The second time, it's a little easier. And the more we walk the path, the easier it is to walk through that 6 inches or foot of snow. And so we have to remember, how do I want to orient my mind? Neuroplasticity shows us your brain's shaped by where you focus and rest your mind. But it's really hard for a people pleaser to stop being who you're not. Stop being who you're not. That sounds kind of funny. But it really resonates with me because it's really hard for me to stop being who I'm not. You want to make people happy. You want them to like you. You assume they won't like who you truly are. So you don your mask or put up your brick wall to hide who you really are. But you don't really need the mask or the brick wall. All you need to do is get with the right people who will accept who you are. And quit worrying about the wrong people who want you to be something different. Donning masks hides the pain of unmet needs. And to defend our vulnerability, we further narrow our sense of who we are. We wear the disguise of busy, important person, angry victim, deficient person, or obsessed, addicted person, according to Tara Brach. Which mask are you donning of who you are that might not be who you really are? For me, it was I know everything and I can do everything and I'm really competent. And that was the mask I wore. And taking it off was hard because I thought that it would mean I wasn't enough. But I keep telling myself I am enough. So true love includes accepting yourself and others as they are now, with all our strengths and all our weaknesses. On his podcast, 10% Happier, I heard Dan Harris say that love is our evolutionary capacity to give a shit. It's our ability to cooperate, communicate, and connect. If you ignore this, it is at your own peril. And for me, that's really important. If you ignore the importance of love, it's at your own peril. True love can only grow on this ground of understanding ourselves and understanding others. Mindfulness meditation slows us down so we can see what's really needed for happiness and what actually is causing our suffering. When we practice, we can see how much peace, happiness, and lightness we have, as well as how much anger, irritation, fear, or anxiety are in us. We see them both. As we become aware of the feelings in us, our self-understanding will deepen. We see how our fears and lack of peace contribute to our unhappiness. Then we see the value of understanding the ones we love. So nourishing love is a lifelong kindness practice. The more you practice, the more you see your love grow. Kindness practice counteracts the loneliness and the sense of separation that comes from not feeling connected to people. And so I hope we all can work on this lifelong practice of letting in love and letting in kindness. It's a conscious decision that we make every day. Not just when we're on our cushion, not just when we're doing walking meditation, but throughout the day, every day, we have to make the conscious choice. Am I going to let in love and kindness? Or am I going to put this brick wall up to keep myself safe?
And the more we understand ourselves, the more we'll see that brick wall is getting in the way of our happiness.